Lawson. He just told me he couldn't hear the Supremes. He said he loves that group, but he didn't get the audio feed of the music coming out there. Jack Lawson, publisher of Civil Defense Manual, the 2-volume book that you can find at civildefensemanual.com. So we talk about here frequently. It covers so many different topics. But, you know, today we've got a lot of different topics to talk about here because there are so many different threats on the horizon, and they're all escalating in so many different ways. So joining us now is Jack Lawson. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Always a pleasure, David. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you on. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the first time we ever talked. Let's begin with what happened with AT&T last week, because the first time we ever talked, we talked about how fragile the infrastructure is. And so, you know, we had the cell phones go down. And part of that was, as I talked about last week, the effect that happened was it grounded a lot of transportation, a lot of trucking was shut down because it created complications for them and dispatchers and other stuff like that. So we see over and over again how an attack on some ancillary part of the infrastructure, for example, the pipeline, the Colonial Pipeline, they shut down their accounting system. So then they shut down the pipeline. No oil is moving if we can't get paid for it. And you shut down things like the cell phone system. And of course, they have a lot of different apps many truckers depend on when they are running that. So you just shut down all the shipping. So it's very easy to shut down stuff like this. What you've been looking at this, and your son is kind of a computer expert as well, a cybersecurity or something. What is your take on it? Do you think it was multiple choice here? Was it a solar flare? Was it ransomware? Was it an AT&T upgrade, or was it a hack? What do you think?
Probably a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
When I say that, I mean it in this light. I've got a friend who I graduated from high school with. He's a dirt poor farm kid like me. He ended up being a director of electronics for Lockheed for their Skunk Works. And he has a program, a lot of them, that he looks at. He's retired now, but one of them is the measurement of solar flares. And he warned me a couple of days ahead of time that there were going to be some really bad X-class solar storms, which would interfere most likely with a lot of RF frequency systems in the country. Second thing being, my son is, he's a very intelligent boy. I had to joke he was sergeant of his Marine Corps Scout Sniper Unit, and I said, "You survived that, and you still got an IQ of 165." So he's gotten himself a really good job. He's a very intelligent guy. He's the cybersecurity, one of the managers for a Fortune 500 company. There's only a couple of them there, but he has a very unique perspective of what goes on. And he said the hacking has gotten epidemic. It's never going to stop.
Yeah.
No matter what they put in for systems. And I think the third thing that everybody is overlooking is the what I actually term the destruction of human productive time by technology colliding with itself. When I say technology colliding with itself, I'm talking about such things as normal functions people use on a computer that are constantly being updated, or they're getting to the point to where two-stage identification, pingbacks, all of this are causing problems with them interrelating with other programs that they've been with. Mm-hmm. I spent an hour and a half yesterday on the phone with my banker, and I get a lot of they help me out quite a bit, and it blew me away what we had to go through to reconnect one particular system. And it's all from some of this is necessary because of the hacking, but I think some of it is also, I was involved with software development one time. It was what I call the what if syndrome. People that are working on these programs and are MIS directors are always saying, what if it could do this? What if it could do that? Mm-hmm. And they diffuse their activities. And in the process, they think that their system is the only one you're dealing with. So consequently, what you end up with, constant changes to programs that look simple to them and beneficial to the customer, but are a total disaster and are functioning without relating together.
Yeah.
I really think you probably hit part of it. There is the, I don't think so much hacking as the solar flares.
I looked at the solar flares. I thought, it looks like this is more heavily focused on AT&T than it is on other carriers, although there were several carriers that were done. And I didn't see that anybody, even AT&T, when they came out with it, they said, we messed up a software update. It's like, okay, well, if you messed up a software update, how did that affect these other companies? And if it was a solar flare, and, you know, some people put that out, talked about the X flare that was coming out, but then they also, I think it was NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, said, no, it wasn't a solar flare. So, but when you look at a solar flare, I would have expected that just like an EMP or something, it would have affected a wider range of hardware. And it would have been hardware-based, and it would have affected more than just primarily a handful of carriers and primarily AT&T. So I looked at it, and I thought, well, as you point out, you know, it certainly is a cybersecurity nightmare now and is getting worse all the time. I just look at this stuff, and that's usually my default fallback position. Somebody's messing around with something deliberately somewhere. Now, who it is, we don't know, right? If it's a state actor, anybody can look like anything that they want to. A Vault 7, we know that, right? They got the tools to disguise themselves as Russia or North Korea or anybody. But is it done because of a criminal gang, or is it done by a state actor? That's always the things that we can never really know when something like that is happening. But it does show the vulnerability, and regardless of what happens, whether it is a physical thing or whether it is a hack attack, whether it's done for private criminals wanting to make money, or because of a state attacking another state, or because of a false flag attack by that. The bottom line is that we have a very fragile infrastructure, and it continues to get more and more fragile, doesn't it?
My God, I can't believe how we've painted ourselves in a corner.
Yeah.
We really don't have much of anything for defense against this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
These people have hacked everything. The postal system's tracking service was down, from what I can determine, during that time. Mm-hmm. My mortgage company, one of the biggest, if not, I think it's the biggest in the nation, my mortgage company was down for 11 days. Somebody got inside their system, and I don't know what all happened, whether it was a ransomware thing, somebody wanted $300 million or whatever, mm-hmm, to put them back online, but they were feverishly working to get the system functioning again.
Yeah.
Cannot believe how we painted ourselves in a corner. You talk about dropping a nuclear bomb on this country, just about as bad.
Yeah.
Shutting his computer system down. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, one person I talk to frequently about cybersecurity issues, he just goes by the name of Goat Tree. He says, you know, when he looks at this, he's a consultant that they hire him to troubleshoot this stuff. His fallback position is when something like this happens and it's some kind of an attack or some kind of equipment failure, first thing he looks for is, okay, so what's going on with the people who might profit from this on the inside? You know, he typically looks at this like an inside job, not necessarily a hack from the outside by a state actor or by a criminal group for ransomware. But usually sometimes it's going to be somebody doing something on the inside because, yeah, you know, they're getting ready for retirement and they want to do something.
Look at the janitor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the CEO, you know, who's retiring.
Yeah. It's just incredible how people don't, they just don't have any concept. Shut your cell phone off for a day.
Yeah.
You get an idea of what is the term they have? They have a term for it.
Addiction.
It's like an abandonment complex for a baby being left outside.
Yeah.
You know, that's the effect it has in your mind. And it just blows me away how absolutely critical it is that these systems that we're relying on them.
Yeah.
And, it just blows me away. But outside of that, I'm not any expert on X-class solar flares. I just know my friend called me out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got all kinds of electronics degrees. And he said, look out, in the next couple of days. And there were problems.
Yeah.
Not severe enough to destroy the electronics, but severe enough to enter. I was in electronics in the Air Force. archaic now, but it wasn't severe enough to destroy semiconductors.
Mm-hmm.
It causes a reverse current through them it blows them up,
mm-hmm.
essentially. When it comes down, it doesn't know which way it's going in a circuit. And if it goes in, it goes in the wrong way. It'll go against what is the normal semiconductor flow pattern, and it'll burn it out. But it wasn't bad enough for that, but it's bad enough to disrupt the RF signals that were being sent out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, you and I have talked in the past about EMP and the fact that the government's not doing anything to protect against that. But even just the simple stuff, the gross neglect that we see, and the border situation. And that's a whole nother area there that, we need to be concerned about. And that is the fact that we just have rampant crime, gangs that can come in, that type of thing. I mean, your take on the border and the kind of threat that presents to us and the kinds of things that we need to do to address that threat.
Well, what blows me away is I ran across something the other day. We're talking about, and I'm not picking on anybody's church because there's plenty of them to pick on here. I've never even heard of some of these organizations.
Mm-hmm.
A number one got $742 million last year was Catholic Charities, U.S. Mm-hmm. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Mm-hmm. Lutheran Church got $471 million. I don't know what Church World Services is, $433 million. World Relief. That's supposed to be another church, $416 million. Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, $186 million. The Episcopal Migration Ministries, whatever that is, $146 million. These people don't need anybody to put anything in the offering plate anymore. I mean, they have money coming in left, right, and center. Apparently, this money is being paid by us,
yes,
by our taxes into the UN and being dispersed back for those people, not for on any other basis other than they get paid per head. I think it's $300 a head for each person. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. This, so it's, you look at this
astounding.
And you can, it was a perfect thing for that because they can always make the case that they're doing it out of compassion and humanitarian interest. And yet there is also a mercenary aspect of it. And they become tools, regardless of what their motivation is, they become tools of these this whole network of NGOs. And I guess maybe Soros is the Pope of some of those churches or something.
Could be.
Or Ursula von der Leyen. Maybe she's a pope of one of these churches.
they can say whatever they want to justify themselves. And I've got this lunatic thinking in my family, too. I'll just say this. If you want to live in a third world country, bring the third world here, which is exactly what they're doing. They have no concept of what 6 or 30 million people that are totally alien to our culture will mm-hmm. do to this culture.
That's right.
And I, as far as these churches professing altruism on this, my last, I parachuted into Zambia in 1978, and I was astounded. These guys said, come over here, look at this. And I walked over to a pile of sudza. Sudza is ground mealy corn. It's like flour is to us. It's mm-hmm. ground wheat to us. They grind up big kernels of maize corn and put water in it and cook it. And I went over there and I just about, if I'd had false teeth, it would have dropped in the ground. I could not believe, donated by World Consulate Churches, Methodist Synod. That's the church I was baptized in. That's the church I was brought up in until I told my mom, even despite her threats to waterboard me, I wasn't going anymore. And I didn't go to that church for a long time, but I saw this and I was furious about it. They knew exactly where this was. This is a communist camp. And mm-hmm. that's where the food was going, and they knew where it was going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I find out that 60 Minutes has one full hour on this thing somewhere around 1984 or 1985. Of course, they always report the news when their side has won and they have got another thing to bash. And it was bashing Christianity through this article. But they showed the same thing that I saw. And my mother played the organ for 50 years in the Methodist Church. I told her about this, and she refused to believe me. You know, I mean, rest her soul. She's a good woman, but she just couldn't conceive that somebody would do this thing. So they can say whatever they want, bringing these people in. When Venezuela empties its prison system out, and they're bringing them in. I mean, it's already started to happen. Cops were getting attacked.
And we've seen this before. I grew up in Florida. I remember when Castro emptied out his prisons and sent them into Florida. That was nothing compared to the scope of what is happening with this. And when you look, I've talked many times about that small island in Italy where they had a population of 6,000 people, small island, and they brought in 18,000 young single males into that area that was supporting 6,000. That's total chaos. That is completely destroyed, and that's by design. And again, as you point out, our government is paying for it. What do you think about what is happening at the border? I mean, you know, I look at this, and you know, at first you can say, "Well, at least the governors are saying we have to take some responsibility for this, and if the federal government's not going to act, we need to do something." But they're not doing anything. I've seen Abbott do these little displays of parking. State trooper cars down at the border and a small line. I've seen him do that kind of stuff before. It's all focused on just one little town in Eagle Pass, right? Do you think that anything is going to change even with these governors talking about this? I don't either.
They're just, they're going through the motions.
Yep.
Like typical politicians do. Yep. Go through the motions, appear like you're doing something. You know who Michael Yawn is.
Oh, yeah.
He is very, very distrustful of Abbott. Mm-hmm. And I tend to believe what Michael Yawn says because he has sources, I believe, that are calling him in the middle of the night, telling him really what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is all purposeful.
Yes.
The attempts by states to stop this certainly won't happen in Arizona, won't happen in New Mexico. They're never going to put any kind of a border resistance or California, Texas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're going through the motions, but Eagle Pass is not going to stop these people.
No. And it's only like a two mile area there that they're talking about, 2.5 miles or something. And people have gone down the border and said, look, there's nothing down here. We got, you know, no wall or big doors on the wall and that type of thing. That's my take on Abbott as well. And I've interviewed Michael Yawn in the past. I think he is a straight shooter. I don't think that the Republicans are straight shooters. They understand what people are concerned about. And they will position themselves and signal that they are doing something about it when in actuality they don't do anything at all about it. So it's really up to us. And how is this going to...
You just said the definition of a politician.
That's right. That's right. Well, unfortunately, the Democrats will do some of the stuff that they promised to do. This.
Well, what,
and it's bad stuff.
If people go to my civildefensemanual.com, look at my latest interview I did. I did it with... A group that I support. It's a disabled organization. And a guy by the name of Stan Szymanski, he's a brilliant man. He first attracted my attention by he was a financial planner. Some of the articles he wrote about the potential for disruption of our economy attracted my attention years ago. And Stan and we did a back and forth thing. We call it wargaming the American apocalypse because doom and gloom, well, I don't care what you want to, it's realism.
Yeah.
It is going to go down. There are so many issues confronting this country that have never collectively been there. You'll hear this from anybody with a sound mind. There's so many issues affecting this country that I can't possibly see mathematically that one of them doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And Yawn says there's 100-some thousand plus Chinese in. He will not disclose his sources, but I believe it's probably patriotic Americans in the Justice Department, the CIA, the Homeland Defense. There are still people in there. I think probably 80% of these organizations don't like what's going on, but the hierarchy and 20% of them are basically pulling all the illegal things that they want to do. So the point being this, if there are that many people inside this country, it's no different than having troops in uniform. He says they're all intelligence, police, or military people.
That's right.
The vast majority of them. Yeah. Again, don't know where he gets his information, but I tend to believe what he says. He doesn't just come out and make stories up.
Oh, yeah. And we had a thing a couple of weeks ago. I didn't really cover it on the show, but there was a guy who was playing piano in a public area in the UK. And there was a group of young Chinese that were kind of there in the background, and they were talking and everything. And they got on his video. And then they realized that they were in the field of view of his video. And they confronted him and told him he had to delete that and all that kind of stuff. And then he kept the camera rolling. And that became a viral video, that the fact that they would demand that they have to have anonymity because they're here with the Chinese government and all this. You know, that type of thing. That is happening all over the place. And we've seen many indications of that the Chinese are getting involved in universities and other things like that. It's a very deliberate process.
I've had quite a bit of the experience. I come from a color crayon box family. I don't have any Chinese, but I've got Koreans and Vietnamese in my family. They're Orientals. Again, you know, that's, I love them or don't talk to them depending on the way they treat me, you know, but I get along with most of them. And it's not based on the shape of eyes or color of skin. I've got blacks in my family too. Point being this, the Chinese are very xenophobic. It amazes me. I have a good Chinese friend, highly educated, who told me they were the original capitalists. And I said, "What? You're communist China?" No. That's all by the wayside. No matter what Mao Zedong did or anybody else, we're all capitalists at heart. It's in our DNA. And I was astounded to hear this person tell me that's why they came up with this marriage between capitalism and this economy they have and the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. It's because they can't get rid of two things in the Chinese. The Chinese secretly worship God. Most of them are Christians. And the second thing is they can't get this capitalism out of them. No matter how many times they execute somebody for secretly selling cigarettes on the street or whatever, they all do it. And I was astounded to listen to that. But we have 100,000 of them in our country. I mean, how one rifle, you can shoot a hole through the bottom of a transformer. This was done. Mm-hmm. Medford, California, I believe, was the place they did it to. Something coordinated, a spotter, two marksmen, absolutely put a large part of the California electrical grid down. Mm-hmm. And that was with about three or four shots from high-powered rifles. We have 100,000 of them. If only 2,500 of them get out and start doing that, that's 50 people in every state. I noticed where I live, the power company has started positioning a vehicle outside of their transformer station. That happened for about two or three weeks a month ago. Then it just disappeared again.
So they heard a threat about that or something. Yeah. And the problem is that there's not a lot that we can do about it. We can't get the government to protect the border. And then even when you look at the government protecting the border, the concern is, are they going to set up some kind of, virtual wall that is going to be a surveillance system? Is that then going to migrate into the rest of the United States? Is the wall going to be used to keep people in? And when you look at it from just even an economic standpoint, we have this giant welfare magnet pulling people in that can bankrupt us. So, you know, how do we push back against this? You know, is it going to be used as a cat's paw to get us to accept a surveillance state, to accept a digital ID in order to try to bring back some sense of order? There's a lot of chaos that's being sown. But what do you think is the key threat right now for America?
To me, the key threat is exactly what, well, let's put it this way. The key threat are all of these illegals in this country that we don't know anything about. We don't know where they are. Nobody's watching them, mm-hmm. as far as I know. And that is the key threat. They could bring our infrastructure. You talked earlier about how dependent we are on the digital systems that we have and power. Mm-hmm. And one of those could take out both of them. And that is just simply destroying transformer stations and transformers and cell sites and this type of thing. It goes down and everything comes to a standstill. I can imagine, but I don't want to live through what goes on after that happens. 95% of the people in this country got two or three cans of beans in their pantry, and that's it.
Yeah.
They don't have any food. Yeah. They don't have any water stored up. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing that's going to kill people is lack of water. Why? Because I've read stories. I've been without water for 4 days. I know what it's like. You start going out of your head. Mm-hmm. And I've read and had people tell me that they knew people that drank motor oil.
Whoa.
Just because it was fluid.
Wow.
It's the insanity that takes over your head.
Mm-hmm.
I was close to that too. I mean, it was.
Well, I know there's the tales of people get, shipwrecked. The ship goes down, they're in a lifeboat, and they're hoping that they can get rescued or whatever. Some of them do. But, you know, they start against their better judgment. They'll drink seawater. And that's it.
Well, we drank our 5% drip solutions. Did it help us? Temporarily, mm-hmm. But it puts you in a worse state afterwards.
Yeah.
But luckily for us, I was too stupid to know what I was doing. Luckily for us, we got out of it before too long. Mm-hmm. But we're in such a fragile state that it actually frightens me. I think the biggest thing is an attack. I think that don't tell me that these people couldn't go door to door with lists of people.
Yeah.
You, me included, judges, policemen, sheriffs, mm-hmm. Federal officials, and just kill people.
Yeah.
What's to stop them from doing that? I'm seeing things about the Chinese coming in. I don't want to pick on them, especially because there's plenty of ones from other countries. They're going to shooting ranges and shooting. Now, part of that is because the Orientals are deprived of guns. The Japanese, they come to Las Vegas. They'll go to spend $4,000 at a machine gun range because they don't get to shoot or have any weapons over there. But the point being this is that I think the biggest danger we have, immediate danger, is the possibility of a coordinated attack. And everybody's got information on who is, who fits into the conservative side or traditional side, who's a troublemaker like you and I.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is a possibility. I prepare for that type of thing. But the bottom line is, and you need to too, but the bottom line is, I don't think it'd be that so much. Why should they waste their time doing that? They can take out this system by taking the electrical grid out. And that happens without people shooting holes in transformers.
That's right.
That happens periodically.
And of course, it could happen in slow motion. You know, we're looking at what's happening in Mexico City. They have they're facing a massive, massive water shortage. And again, it's an urban area. So these people don't have any backup system. They don't have any well that they can draw from or anything. They're totally dependent on infrastructure. They're one of the most heavily populated cities in the world. And they're looking at not being able to get basic water to people.
Yeah.
And that's what this kind of chaos. A government that doesn't have or is incapable or unwilling to provide an infrastructure, and then you pack people together. And this is a hallmark of what is happening at the border with all of these Central and South American countries, sending up prisoners, sending up cartels, and I'm sure it'd be very easy for the cartels to start doing incursions across the border. They've gotten right up to the border, having shootouts with Mexican federales and that type of thing. So
yeah, they've got some incredible military hardware too. I mean, I've seen pictures of stuff that where it came from. It came from Afghanistan.
Yeah,
most likely there or the Ukraine.
Yeah,
there's a lot of corruption going on there. But I think that people don't really understand the water is taken for granted. Water weighs 8 pounds per gallon. If you're going to haul 5 gallons of water, you're hauling 40 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Water is much more difficult to keep from spoiling, so to speak, as bacterial growth, much more difficult to store than and keep long term than food is, really.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I feel like an insurance salesman sometimes trying to talk to people about food because they take it so granted, water, they take it so granted. It's like an intangible, unseeable insurance policy because not that they can't see these, it's just their mind can't conceive of being without them.
Yeah.
But
and of course, people go to civildefensemanual.com. You got a free chapter there from the book about water because that is so key and so core that you want people to have that information. You know, another thing too, Jack, in just the last week or so, the mainstream media has picked up the case of this Amish farmer, Amos Miller. I don't know if you saw that or not, but he's in a thing with the state Department of Agriculture there, but they really want to shut down individual farms. Now, Thomas Massie has got his Prime Act, and he's taken this as an advocacy, and it's really resonated with a lot of Republicans, even with a lot of Republican officials at the state level. And so now the mainstream media is pushing back against all this stuff. It is really vital for them to keep us dependent on them for their food. And so that's a key thing that you talk about when you talk about our current food supply and how do we get this garden to a table type of food supply for our own benefit.
Yeah, and it's worse than garden to table. The systems they have now, you go to the grocery store and buy a loaf of bread, it's automatically ordering another loaf of bread before you walk out the door. Mm-hmm. So by within probably 12 to 24 hours at the latest, they've restocked with every loaf of bread that went through their cashier line. So if there were 1,000 loaves of bread, there's another 1,000 loaves of bread that are delivered probably by 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. And in the process of this direct from manufacturer to the grocery store, there's no reserve anymore. It's an absolute hand-to-mouth system as far as supply. They used to have warehouses full of foods, and of course, they would move those fairly quickly. It's no longer there. So they're literally, we are standing at the end of the water pump and waiting for somebody to crank the handle before we can get our cup full. It's the way it is. And it's way that way with food also. Mm-hmm. It's very disturbing to look at it from that side. A lot of people don't want to realize, hey, we're America. We've never had anything like third world problems like this. That's because geographically more than anything, we have never really had to face these issues. But now the illegals inside this country and the technology that we have saddled ourselves with are threatening to change that defense we had, that geographic defense. It's no longer there.
And of course, you know, it's the technology has made us dependent on it in so many different ways besides the just-in-time delivery. That was the first thing you and I ever talked about, all these different legs of, the supply chain. We saw that busted significantly during 2020 after we had talked about it. I talked to you the first time. It was way before 2020. But, you know, we saw a bit of what happened with that when we just had the arbitrary closure of so many different things and even changing the way that the products would be delivered. You know, you're not going to be able to go to your office and eat there in the cafeteria. You can't go there to use the restroom. Those were all closed. So now we got toilet paper that's in a format that we can't get to you even as a consumer. We got food that's in a format we can't get to you as a consumer. All these sorts of things. So we saw massive amounts of food being destroyed, but people couldn't find anything on the shelf. It's so easy in this kind of complex system to break it, just as we saw with the cell phones and shutting down a lot of truckers because they couldn't get their cell phone to work. So it's incredibly fragile. And I guess, you know, that's one of the reasons why your book is so important. I think it's very important for people to start to take some measures, anything that they can do from the beginning, as you pointed out, just to, you know, getting a few, you know, occasionally buying cans of food and setting them aside because it's going to last for quite a while.
They can simply start storing some water.
Yeah.
Water is the first thing that's going to kill people, either lack thereof or drinking something that isn't potable, something that's not safe to drink. And that could be anything, water, bad water, or anything other than that. You can get water out of a stream up in the mountains. looks so crystal clear. Oh my God, this is from God. Mm-hmm. This is God's hand has given me this water. And if you drink it, you'll be sicker than a dog at the end of the day. I've done this, been through it. I think that the funny thing is, we are so abundant here. My wife, being from Zimbabwe, Africa, formerly Rhodesia, she still is amazed to go find a tube of toothpaste because there are 40, 50 different types of toothpaste. What kind do you want? What flavor do you want? What consistency do you want? Gel, you want a paste? And she has never gotten over this. She's been in this country 40 years. And she is blown away because she's been back to Africa. And you go to the toothpaste section, there's maybe one tube or there isn't any there. Or they've got baking soda set in a place to use. It's a mindset that's caused Americans to think that we're invulnerable, we're invincible. Mm-hmm. We can't have these things happen. Mm-hmm. And we've set ourselves up for a fall with all this digitized infrastructure. So
yeah, you're talking about a Disneyland mentality that people have, that everything's going to be just fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, until it isn't.
That's right.
And simple math, being in Las Vegas, I'll never forget the guy, Jimmy the Greek. He was a odds maker who was very, very popular. And he made a statement. It's pretty much a maxim in mathematics now. The further you are from the point of something happening, the more probability you have that it will happen. And we have gone for, what, 70, 80 years? Mm-hmm. We've never had our food system, which consists in most people's mind of the grocery store. Now it's prepackaged delivered food or mm-hmm. a restaurant. We've mm-hmm. never had any of those fail us.
That's right.
And
we've really become kind of helpless, kind of like Eloy or something. Karen and I went to New Zealand in 1998, and we went on a jet boat ride that they had there. That's one thing that they kind of developed there because of their shallow streams and stuff. But they would take down these canyon walls where there were, you know, rocks and everything. They go really fast. And he says, "Oh, you're Americans. Well, let me explain this to you." He says, this is not a ride at Disneyland. He said, if we're going towards something and it looks like you're going to hit your head, duck, because you're going to hit your head. It's like, wow, that's the way the world sees us. And I guess really he's kind of right about that because, you know, we really do believe that everything's going to be just fine. We're going to be taken care of. Everything's been thought of and everything is planned out. And that's not the way the world works, you know, and you find that out when you get the punch in the face.
Yeah, I learned this from you, I think, a couple of interviews ago. You made a statement that people driving in the third world, they don't have any line down the center of the road, any dotted line. You know, they don't have a line on the outside, a white one that tells them, hey, you're too far to the right or too far to the left or whatever. They don't have that type of thing. And consequently, they're alert for mm-hmm. other drivers. Mm-hmm. They don't even have stop signs. I remember driving in the mountains on an island called Roatan in Honduras, and I had a pickup I rented, and I came roaring around the corner. They've set rocks up. The road washed out. So they set rocks up. No warning signs, nothing. I went over the hill and I'm barely missed hitting those rocks. But you brought the point up, which is very valid, that Americans have so much of this drawn out that it's become mindless for us to even drive.
Mm-hmm.
You got a light that tells you to stop. Even if you go through that green light and there's a car from the right coming towards you, most Americans would look to the right and say, look at that damn fool. He's coming towards me. You know, he's going to T-bone me, you know, instead of putting the brakes on. We've just become way too complacent with all of the issues that are hand-delivered to us and take the fear out. So.
And I have a sense of entitlement. I've got the right-of-way. Oh, you're going to be dead right, you know, about this thing if you don't pay attention to it. But that's even to the extent that, you know, now the sense of entitlement extends to the fact, well, you better not say anything that offends me. You know, I mean, I'm supposed to be protected from any contingency, even from hearing harmful things. You know, I mean, it's just we have become so pacified, so controlled, and we demand safety over everything else. And yet, It's not safe at all if you are not aware of your surroundings and if you don't have the ability to be able to provide for yourself. That's why I like to recommend Civil Defense Manual, because that's a good place for people to start. You got a lot of different areas there people can start, whether you're talking about food or water, whether you're talking about defense, whether you're talking about organizing in a community. That's something we need to do even for a political standpoint, to start organizing at the local level. You know, people talking about Christian nationalism. I said, no, talk about Christian localism. You know, you need to build from the ground up.
This book will save people's lives. Mm-hmm. I've gotten into a battle in my family. I got a big family. I've got like 55 cousins and grandchildren, nieces, nephews, all that. That's why I got rid of my iPhone, because the texting was driving me crazy. They all think Uncle Jack's a cat's meow. Well, I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear everybody's life story all day. So I've gotten into a battle in my family, and that battle is over freedom of speech. And I'm not going to take the liability for telling your listeners this, but I refuse to shut my mouth about things. If somebody brings something up, I will counter it right there.
Yeah.
I am not going to let tyranny rule over my family. When you've got an obnoxious brother-in-law looking at you like, oh my God, you got to, you know, it's like you're holding a dead fish up in your fingers, you know, and it smells like terrible, you know, and we don't talk about things like that around here. Well, maybe you don't, but I do, because you guys brought it up.
Yeah.
You know, I've started doing it. I get into it with my wife, because she's English and she's a person that's used to being reserved and polite, which most people in the world to a degree are that way, much more than Americans. We're pretty outspoken, but we're stopping that. And I'm going the other way now. And
yeah, they want to intimidate you. They want to intimidate you. And if you, know what the, you know what they don't want you to say, and you can't self-censor yourself. You know, that's gotten me in a lot of trouble. It's got me a lot of trouble with all the social media, the YouTube and all the rest of the people, because I'm not going to self-censor. If I'm going to talk about the vaccines, I'm not going to use a euphemism. You know, I'm just going to tell you what this thing is. The vaccine is going to do this and that to you. I'm not going to, dance around the topic like that. And so as a result, you get banned for doing that. But, you know, that to me, that is the worst thing that we can do, is what Solzhenitsyn was saying. You know, don't live by lies, even if they're going to, and pressure you on this. You know, you got to speak the truth as you know it, and not, deliberately live by a lie in order to please other people. And I think now where we are is with the pronouns. You know, I mean, the pronouns stuff, how ridiculous is that? But that's a good example.
I started to support an organization at one point until I got woke up. I don't know why I didn't see this in the first email, but the director sent me, I took this personal lunch. I was interested in helping these young kids that were being bullied at school, because I was terribly bullied in school. A lot of people were.
Oh, yeah.
But I started seeing the her, she, he, they, it pronouns, and I just cut it off right there. I couldn't understand why this person was using this refuge type thing, and I think they're doing more. They're trying to, I think, indoctrinate these kids.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know your sexuality.
That's right. They want to confuse it. Yeah, we were all bullied in school, but now the kids are bullied and gaslit, you know, and groomed. You know, that's what they just added that to it. And they're still being bullied over the pronouns and other things like that, just in a different way and by a different group of people. The people at the top are bullying them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Most of the people I graduated with haven't been more than 500 miles from home. I've been all over the world, and I'll never regret whatever they think they have. And what I've had and seen through my eyes and heard and felt going around the world. But let me go back to one thing you were talking about, that farmer, that Amish farmer in
Amos Miller,
Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? Raw milk is going to maybe kill somebody. Yeah, you know, the government has a monopoly on death. They can give you a vaccine and try to force you to take it. And, well, we can kill you with something that wasn't even tested. Mm-hmm. But, boy, you can't have raw milk.
Yeah.
I come from a farm that we milked a lot of cows. I don't know. I'm 77. I think I'm pretty healthy. I don't know. I might be dead tomorrow, but bottom line is I drank raw milk all the time.
Yeah.
And what's bad about it? I don't know, but somebody's conjured this up. And government, if they're there, they need to control. They don't feel like they're complete. And the day has, when the sun goes down, if they haven't gone in and rousted somebody and told somebody the way it is, they don't feel like they had a productive day.
That's
and that's may sound a little bit opinionated, but it is my opinion of government. At least in other countries, governments usually stay away from you. You either bribe them. They're all taking money under the counter. And I'll admit, I've done it. I've gotten a friend out of getting arrested by the Thai police one time. He was a lieutenant colonel, and I went over and gave shook hands, money with the lieutenant and the tourist police, and said, look, I'll take him home. He didn't really mean anything by that. I took him home, told him to stay inside and shut your mouth because he was criticizing the king of Thailand, and that can get you get you in some serious trouble. I've seen an Australian about 6'5" with about 15 or 20 Thais beating the ever living daylights out of him.
Wow.
Just because he made a smart remark and shouldn't have. And you just learn to keep your mouth shut about the king. Yeah. He was a great guy. I mean, he took care of that country. So I'm not advocating that type of government, but he did what he needed to do for his people.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep your mouth shut about it. You're in their country. Just like if somebody comes to my living room, don't start telling me how ugly my artwork looks, you know, even though I drew it. And, you know, but anyway, I just think it's incredible that they did what they did with this farmer.
And of course, with your experience and so many different places, and of course, you have you've seen communism in action, and of course, ChatGPT and the Google Gemini say you can't criticize communism. That's not allowed, you know. But we know what it really is, and you've experienced it firsthand. You mentioned an encounter that you had with somebody from Cambodia and Phnom Penh. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I went all through Southeast Asia. I don't know how long I stayed there, but when you go to these countries, you obviously, if you got the money, you stay in a nice place. I stayed in probably the nicest hotel. I think it was 7 or 8 stories high in Phnom Penh. And I was sitting there one evening. I didn't drink. I don't drink anymore, but I didn't drink any alcohol. I was having a cup of tea. And I'm looking across the Mekong River, which is probably 1.5 miles wide there. Mm-hmm. And I'm astounded. It comes out of Vietnam and wanders up into Cambodia, I think into Laos. And I'm sitting there looking at it. It was so peaceful. The people were so extremely nice. I had to think back to when the Khmer Rouge took over in 1976. In 3 years, the Khmer Rouge communists killed, if anybody can believe this, 1.7 million people, 1/3 of their population.
Wow.
And it was crazy because they were trying to get rid of anyone educated. So if you wore a pair of glasses and you were taken as being an educated person, because most people over there, now if somebody had bad eyesight in an organization or somebody got them glasses, a person could have no education. But they took these people out in the swamp areas north of Phnom Penh, and it was a place called the Killing Fields. Mm. It was a huge, long swamp area, and they wouldn't put a bullet in the back of your head. They were getting rid of all the intellectuals, everybody, and they were getting it down to the peasants, and it was going to be a totally farming country. There was going to be no attorney's offices, none of this. And they did a pretty good job. 1.7 million people were killed by executioners putting a plastic bag over their head, suffocating them to death. Mm. Down to kids that were 3 months old. Where do you find this stuff? You can go to a place called Toll Slang. It was a school. They tortured to death 17,000 people in there.
Wow.
Who were their jailers? Most of them were young 12, 13, 14-year-old kids. People were killed there, but the majority of them. And I'm sitting there and I can't believe, and I have this exceptionally nice waiter, and I asked the guy, what's Phnom Penh stand for? And he says, it means the city of four faces. And I thought, well, that's pretty much justly represents what happens with humanity. Mm. People don't think anything like that can happen in your society. Those people went from being that pleasant person to the evil faces went on and the executioners came out, and it didn't stop until they killed 1/3 of their population. That'd be like us killing off 110 million Americans.
Wow.
And it devastated the country. It set them so far back. But you go over there now, and people in Vietnam don't remember anything. Most of them are in their 30s and 40s. And I was just totally astounded how that could happen. And I've seen this other places, and we think we're immune from this. I hope it never comes, but yeah. People can't put it out of their mind. Food, store water, buy yourself a shotgun and 500 rounds of shotgun shell, double out buck and some slug.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say, go get yourself something for protection. But some people think protection is having pepper spray. That's not going to do you any good. Unfortunately, if it comes down to defending yourself, the most efficient item is a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have everybody in your family know how to run it. But you need water, you need food and medicines, and you can go on and on. What you need to do is get together with your neighbors and know who in the hell is around you, because you, if things go bad, are going to need other people to help defend your area, to keep some civility, to keep people from getting harmed by gangs and whatnot, which is going to be the first threat. But
yeah, that's right. That's what I like about your book. It talks about the psychology of getting together in a group, things to do that are good, things to do that are not good in it. And that is very important, especially now that the government has started focusing on, well, if you got a group of people and they got rifles, they're militia and they're bad and they're a threat to us and they're sovereign citizens or whatever labels they want to hang on people like that. It's very important
I get
that you're
around,
wise about that.
I get around that in the book, and mm-hmm. I specifically go in to the definition of militia, and people are forming their what they're called, I call neighborhood guardians.
That's right.
For the defense only of their area. And it blows me away how some of the people that think they're traditional now and conservative have been so propagandized over the years in, you can't do that. Oh, that's against the law.
Mm-hmm.
Not really, because I sat in a police board. I got a pretty good idea what obstruction of traffic and obstruction of law enforcement and that type of thing. Let me tell you something. If things go sideways, which they will,
mm-hmm.
if they go sideways, people are going to end up in their neighborhood. They control their area. Law enforcement is going to love them. One mm-hmm. less area to go in and deal with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. And that's the other side of this. It's I interviewed a long time ago, She Van Fleet, Tucker just interviewed her, talking about her book, Mao's America. She said, I went through all this stuff you call woke now. She said that struggle sessions and the self-denouncement and all this other kind of stuff that they're now doing in universities and teaching people like that. She said that was all done, when she's warning Americans what this looks like. And it's true. All the stuff that you talked about with Cambodia, that was what Mao was doing with his cultural revolution. He was executing intellectuals. He wanted everybody to be in agriculture and all that type of thing. And so we see that. But then on the other side, one of the things that I'm concerned about, of course, is all the talk when we see at CPAC, all these people, well, if we lose the election, it looks like it's a civil war. Everybody, it seems like on both sides of this, are being primed to come after each other. And we're at a time, like about every 80 years, everybody gets antsy and they change all the institutions, have a big financial crisis and that type of thing. But everybody is primed to come after other people. It seems like the way this country is being divided, very, very concerning to me. That is as concerning as what is happening at the border to me.
This I blame most of this attitude and this polarization on the technology. And one of the worst violators is Facebook.
Yep.
People have learned to say things over a computer that they wouldn't say in front of you to your face, because you would punch their snout through the back of their skull.
That's right.
You know, to put it crudely, people would not put up with his face to face. So what they do is they read this, they're angry, and it builds a pressure up in them.
Yes.
Just like it does kids when you have a zero tolerance policy. My football coach, our gym coach, used to take us to the wrestling room, and we would have what we call murder brawl. And it would be the kids in the class, all of us kids in the class. He'd divide them into two halves, and one had eaten and it's padded in this room. And he'd throw a soccer ball out there, and the point was to get the ball and touch the wall on the opposite end. And of course, while everybody's looking for the ball, there's usually three or four guys over there punching it out because they don't like each other, you know, and they get it out of their system. We didn't bring firearms to school and shoot each other. So it's like the gun-free zone. This type of zero tolerance, mm-hmm. is doing the opposite of what it should do.
That's right.
And, you know, I'll never be able to argue that with the teachers in my family, because they got PhDs. They can't tie their shoes, but they got PhDs, you know.
It's piled higher and deeper. Yeah, that's the key thing. You know, the technology is isolating us from each other, from human contact, doing that so they can monitor and surveil everything that we do. But as you point out, the other side of that that comes along with this isolation is that when we do interact with other people, we don't see them as human. And so it builds up this this animosity, because we're at a distance, and it's just the I don't know. It just seems like everything that is being done to us now is being done to heighten division, to sow chaos. And whether it's the border or whether it's what is happening inside the border, it seems like it is all compounding. Well, it's been great talking to you. And again, I love your book, Civil Defense Manual. I had a guy who picked it up. He said, that is worth $1,000. You know, so he said, I love the information that's in there. You sell it as a pair, but I would encourage people to go to the website, civildefensemanual.com. You've got interviews there. You've got articles that are there. You've got excerpts from the manual that are there. A great resource. People always say, well, you know, what can I do about this? We need to be able to take action. We need to be able to do this as individuals and as a community. That is the key thing. And you've got a lot of answers in that book, and you've got a lot of experts who have chimed in on that you've created a great resource that's there. Always great talking to you, Jack.
Good to talk to you, David. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Talk to you later.
The David Knight Show is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic by listening to the David Knight Show, please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. Trust the science. Wear your mask. Take your vaccine. Don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.